From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The Trump White House on Tuesday released a report on school safety that was commissioned in the aftermath of the 2017 Parkland, Florida massacre. Shockingly, the report downplays the role of guns in gun-related school violence. Instead, it focuses on undoing disciplinary policies that were enacted under Obama, policies that protected students from racial and other forms of discrimination. The School Safety Commission also argued, much like the president and the NRA have publicly done, that arming teachers as first responders to an active shooter is a good option. The commission was headed by Education Secretary Betsy DeVos, who just a few weeks ago enacted a set of guidelines to rewrite Title IX protections. The new rules on how schools should handle sexual misconduct claims eases the liability of schools over the rights of victims. My guest is Miriam Rollin, director of the Education Civil Rights Alliance at the National Center for Youth Law. Welcome to the program, Miriam.
Thanks so much, Sonali.
So first, let's start with what was done around the latest news with the School Safety Commission. This commission was, you know, just a few people. It was DeVos, it was Homeland Security Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen, Alex Azar, Health and Human Services Secretary. She headed it. And this particular commission was supposed to look at the ways in which we can make schools safer. It seems as though they concluded that their recommendations, with recommendations that might actually make schools less safe. What do you think?
I unfortunately agree. I think this commission's recommendations would make schools less safe. And that's because they're obviously, as you pointed out, ignoring the issue of guns entirely and addressing issues that have to do with civil rights, protecting civil rights of marginalized children and youth, kids of color, in terms of school discipline, which the school shooting that happened really didn't have anything to do with that. The young person who committed the Parkland shooting had already been expelled, had already been referred to police. The policy in terms of school discipline in the Parkland school system was put into place before the Obama regulation or Obama guidance was put out. So it really is completely a red herring to eliminate the school discipline guidance. And unfortunately, eliminating that takes away a tool for schools to actually ensure that they are complying with the law and ensure that they are not discriminating against kids of color.
Let's actually step back and look at what it was that was enacted in 2014. I understand it was essentially a memo clarifying existing law and giving a sort of symbolic support to schools that want to ensure they don't racially discriminate or discriminate in a variety of ways against students, particularly students of color. So this was sort of a clarification of existing law.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So you have the Title VI statute, which requires that schools not discriminate. You have the regulations that are implementing regulations under that law. This guidance, and frankly, the elimination of the guidance, doesn't change the law itself. So regardless of whether or not we have the guidance, the law is the law, and schools can't discriminate based on race, color, ethnicity, etc. Now, the challenge in terms of taking away the guidance is that it really provided useful information. So it helped schools to understand what is the process through which the Office of Civil Rights will look at potential cases of discrimination, and then what are some of the tools that schools can use that are evidence-based approaches, effective approaches to reduce the likelihood of discrimination in school discipline, and frankly, to improve behavior in schools and make schools better places for learning for all of the students in those schools. And so by taking away that guidance, it doesn't change the requirements that schools have to live by those laws, but it does take away some of the tools for them actually understanding how to apply the law in their school context and how to ensure that they're approaching things using the best information available.
Right. We know that there are, unfortunately, discriminatory policies that get played out every day across the country in our schools. And that's because we live in a racist society. The biases of school administrators, teachers, students against one another, et cetera, all do play out. We know that kids of color are disproportionately disciplined, punished, et cetera. So these guidelines were put in place or this memo to encourage students to respect students' rights was put in place. How did the school safety commission link the Parkland massacre and this horrific mass shooting to these guidelines that protect students of color from discrimination? It just blows my mind.
Honestly, the link is just not there. You know, obviously the shooter in that case was white, and
in many cases are white. In mass shootings are disproportionately
white. That seems
white.
To be a trend. Yeah. That seems to be a trend in a lot of these cases, and so that's what makes it such a red herring to have a school shooting by a white shooter in Parkland mean that we're going to undermine the protections for kids of color under the law in Title VI and the implementing regulations. So it's a red herring. I mean, there really isn't a connection, but sadly, they are utilizing this tragedy and the aftermath of the tragedy of people saying why and what can we do to do something they wanted to do anyway, which is to undermine civil rights for marginalized children and youth, particularly kids of color. And one way that they're doing that is the law protects against two types of discrimination. One is what's called intentional discrimination, and the other is disparate impact discrimination. And they're basically saying, well, we're just going to ignore disparate impact discrimination. Well, when you have three times the number of kids of color getting suspended from school as white kids, there's a disparate impact problem that is at least raised by those numbers. But the numbers alone don't prove that there's disparate impact. You also have to show that the policies or practices creating that disparate impact are educationally necessary. And then if educationally necessary, you have to show there's no comparably effective alternatives that can achieve those goals with less of a discriminatory impact.
So on this issue of school safety, which they were supposed to address, their solutions included arming teachers, but no details on how that should be carried out or whether that would actually have an impact. In the end, it feels as though the real danger that students face from, and I'm talking about the life and death danger now, not just the danger the students of color face from discrimination, but the life and death danger from mass shooters was left really unaddressed. And this is all happening at the same time as a judge ruled that an armed police officer who was outside the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas School in Parkland, Florida, did not have the obligation to protect the students from an active shooter, that the police are only under obligation to protect people who are in their custody. So we have a situation where we have a country floating in guns. The police don't have to protect you unless you're already in their custody. And the only solution that our government has to protect kids is to put more guns into the mix in the hands of teachers. This is just sounds like a shameful abdication.
Well, and they're also recommending more school resource officers. And, there's actually, sadly, no evidence that having school resource officers actually increases safety on the part of students or teachers in the schools. And there is evidence, pretty solid evidence, that when you have more police, which tend to have the highest concentration in schools with lots of kids of color, that results in exacerbating the school-to-prison pipeline. So you end up with more kids getting arrested for stuff that you know, if a kid who isn't a kid of color or a kid in a more privileged school commits, maybe it's a slap on the wrist, maybe it's a call to a parent. Well, if there's a school resource or officer there, you know, they're gonna have a much higher likelihood of ending up with that kid arrested in the juvenile delinquency system, ultimately in the prison.
Let's talk about what DeVos has overseen at the Education Department. Just a few weeks earlier, we had this new set of guidelines around Title IX protections and how schools are held liable for sexual misconduct claims and how they might handle those sexual misconduct claims. Miriam, first explain to us what the Title IX protections were and you know, what their goal is before we get to what DeVos has done to them.
Right. So Title IX is a statute that was enacted many years ago in the 70s as an amendment to the education law to protect against discrimination based on sex in schools and to ensure that any discrimination based on sex isn't impeding young people's opportunities to get the full benefit of education, both in the K-12 system and in public schools and early childhood education as well, and in the college environment as well. And so, you know, the protection is just to reduce discrimination based on sex. And that has been applied over the years to apply to situations of sexual harassment, sexual assault that impede the victims of that assault or harassment from being able to be in an environment where they can learn. And so so the Obama administration, again, had promulgated guidance about sexual assault. And of course, Secretary DeVos, once she was installed as Secretary of Education, rescinded that guidance. There's a lawsuit pending on that issue. But now she's proposed, and it is proposed, it's not final yet, right. So has proposed regulations on Title IX that really do harm to victims' rights, sexual assault and harassment victims' rights in education in so many ways. The two major categories of ways that that proposed regulation hurts victims. One is the what. So what should schools respond to? And then the other is the how. So how should schools respond to it? And in both the what and the how, it basically is going to be undermining the rights of victims. And I can give some examples of both, if that would be helpful.
Well, we know that for years, schools have, first of all, campuses have been disproportionately areas where regions where women in particular are sexually abused, suffer sexual assault at a higher than average rate, and that colleges and schools often don't have the right kind of support for victims who come forward, will often sideline them, will go as far as they possibly can to sweep it all under the rug. And so there have been many high profile cases in recent years. And instead of actually doing something productive about it, DeVos, as you said, came into her position. That was one of the things that she took aim at. I mean, what other motivation can we seek from her, this female head of the Department of Education, other than to protect schools and protect accused, you know, people accused of sexual assault? That's basically who she's protecting.
That's right. And it's being done in the name of due process and fairness to the offenders. But actually, there's already a decent amount of due process and fairness to offenders. The rules and approaches that had been in place, or actually, I should say, are in place currently, because again, this is a proposal, not a final rule. The current approaches are in fact fair and provide due process and enable victims to come forward in a more supportive environment, but also protect the rights of the assailants as well. But the way that these the insidious ways that this proposed rule is changing the balance against victims of sexual harassment and assault are several. So you know, in terms of what schools respond to, if someone reports sexual harassment or assault to the wrong school employee, it may not count as a report. And so the school doesn't have to do anything about it. If it was off-campus behavior or online behavior, that may not count as something that the school actually has any obligation to do anything about. They substantially narrowed the definition of sexual assault and harassment that rises to the level of what the school has to respond to, so that, you know, if the student's still doing pretty well in school and there's no impact on that student's education, then that's okay too. You know, there's also in terms of the due process issues for victims and for folks who have experienced sexual assault and harassment, there's now the opportunity to delay the Title IX proceedings entirely at the school level if there's a criminal proceeding going on, whereas actually under the prior approach, schools had to deal with it promptly and there were specific time limits. They now have raised the evidence standard so that many cases will have to be decided by clear and convincing evidence, which is a very, very high standard, instead of preponderance of the evidence, which means it's more likely than not. Well, under the law currently, the standard of proof used by the courts, by federal courts, in all civil rights cases is preponderance of the evidence. That's the civil rights case standard. So to make it clear and convincing for victims of sexual assault, where their difficulties in coming forward and reporting these cases is maybe even higher than in many other types of civil rights violations, is absurd. And yet that's exactly what they're doing.
So taken together, these stories suggest that Betsy DeVos, our head of Department of Education under the Trump administration, is making schools, colleges, universities, etc., a more dangerous place for students. I'm wondering what legal challenges there are to these assaults, because these go against the spirit of our civil rights laws that have been put into place through years of grassroots struggle, legislative action. You know, it just seems entirely wrong that a single person would be able to upend all of this.
Well, you know, the nice thing is that a single person can't. Betsy DeVos has proposed these regulations, and the Secretary of Education has the power to do that. But there is now, as we speak, a comment period. So anyone who's concerned about these regulations, please comment on the proposed Title IX regulations. It is very important to hear lots of voices expressing dismay about these changes that undermine protections for victims of sexual violence and harassment and assault. I mean, even things like the rule previously was that you, for an appeal, you had to have equal rights to appeal. Well, now they're saying that if you're the person who's committed the assault, you have a right to appeal if your punishment was too severe. But the victim now doesn't necessarily have a right to appeal if the penalty, in their view, wasn't severe enough. So it's unequal rights to appeal now. You know, the cross-examination, they had protections for victims before so that it minimized the trauma to the victims in terms of answering questions. The questions still had to be answered by the assailant or their counsel, but just in ways that avoided re-traumatization of those victims. Now, it could be that schools put in practices that cross-examination, particularly in the higher education environment, that cross-examination in a live hearing, that's what's going to happen. And that means that, for instance, that victim is going to have the offender's attorney grilling them in person on what happened. And, you know, or it could be a friend of the assaulter, it could be a parent of the assaulter grilling the victim. You know, there are ways to have those questions answered in a safer environment than these regs provide.
So essentially, we're taking many steps backwards with these. It's really incumbent upon people who have a vested interest, which is most of the rest of America, coming forward and speaking out against these proposed changes in the comment period. So our schools really are struggling at a time when they're even losing funding because of the way in which state treasuries are seeing tax revenues decline thanks to the tax reform bill. We're seeing imminent teacher strikes in, you know, places like Los Angeles, where this program is produced. We've had a number of teacher strikes over low pay over the last year. And I'm wondering if you think that this administration overall just really does not respect education, and that, you know, goes hand in hand with their utterly ignorant approach to so many issues. I mean, this is a poorly educated administration. It's rife with unqualified people, decision makers, and they are destroying our educational system, perpetuating, poor systems at a time when that's really what we need most of all. One could argue public education is the most important thing that we can give our children.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I know it's cheesy, but children are our future. And frankly, if we're not investing in them adequately and protecting them from harm, then we're not doing our job as adults who are connected with the systems that affect those kids. So, one hopeful note is that even though the federal government is abdicating its responsibility, and I have to note that even where some of the recommendations of the School Safety Commission were good, like, oh, we should have more mental health for kids, and oh, we should have PBIS and restorative, you know, other approaches to behavior supports, social emotional learning, et cetera, in schools. So those are good recommendations, which actually are consistent with or already in the guidance that they're talking about rescinding, but no funding. So the federal government is abdicating its responsibility. It's saying, oh, so state systems of education, local systems of education, you find funding for what you need somehow. And so they're abdicating their responsibility. However, the good news is there actually are some court developments in our court systems across the country that are beginning to address, you know, some of the problems of inadequacy and inequity in school financing structures that are going on all across the country, where schools don't have the resources that they need to do the education for the students in their care. And, and we need to be making sure that that's happening. And a lot of successful court cases now are moving forward or have already been decided that are working to ensure that there in fact is adequacy and equity in the school financing structures around the country. So there's been success in New Mexico case decision recently, and cases have been allowed to move forward recently, and in California and Minnesota, and there've been some great special education decisions. You know, part of this, actually, if you want to go to the school shooting situation, if you read the specifics of the history of involvement of the shooter in the special education system, there were multiple opportunities where, had appropriate resources been provided, i.e. had IDEA, the special education law in the nation, been followed, it might have prevented the shooting, because he was basically told, you're not going to get services if you go to this school that you want to go to. He wanted to go to the school because that's where his girlfriend was rather than the special education environment. But they said, but we're not going to provide you any services if you go to that school. Well, that's not what the law says. Right. The law says that you know, young people need special education supports to be mainstreamed into programs that are regular education programs. And so, you know, that we need to provide those special education resources. We need staff, we need more staffing, and we need training for the staffing to make sure that they're really doing the best job available and not using some of the punitive approaches, not only suspension, expulsion, but there's things like restraints and seclusion being used. A kid just died in California as a result of restraints that just should not have been used. And so, you know, there's so many things going on in schools that are in part the result of inadequate resources, inadequate training, and it's harming our kids in a big way all across the country.
Well, Miriam, I appreciate the work you do, and I want to thank you so much for joining us today, shedding light on some of these issues.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Miriam Rollin is director of the Education Civil Rights Alliance at the National Center for Youth Law. We've been discussing how Trump's Education Department under Betsy DeVos is making schools more dangerous for students. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and now on Instagram at RU with Sonali.